This is probably the biggest congregation I've had in quite some time. If we get 30 people on North Lake, that's a good Sunday. But it's good to see all of you here this morning and to share some thoughts I have about kind of what's going on. I won't be the only guy to talk to you today about values, but that's what I want to talk about. And it's difficult to separate our personal values that we all hold from those who were really the values of the founders of this great nation. And those values are immortalized in our Constitution and Bill of Rights. These human rights values should not only drive our institutions and their leaders, but also drive our daily lives and our behavior. Of course, values without action is meaningless. And putting values into action is what leadership is all about. Now, what do I mean when I say leadership? I think one of the best definitions comes from John Quincy Adams, the second president of our great nation. He said, if your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, you are a leader. In other words, leadership is all about enabling others to dream, learn, and to both do and be more. But leadership is not an easy task. In fact, it also can be a very lonely experience. Looking back in my life, I think about the times I had to stand up and be a leader. It never was easy, and it often was lonely. As a young police officer in Minneapolis, I requested to walk a solitary footbeat in a tough inner city neighborhood. It was the first footbeat in that area. All the other footbeats in the city served the business community. And serving this neighborhood seemed like the right thing to do, but if I was to survive, I knew I had to develop trusting relationships with those who lived in this neighborhood, those whom I was sworn to both protect and serve. Now, those are simple words, aren't they? I mean, you see them all around the country, police guards with protect and serve on the door. But to act on them is not so easy. Protecting and serving is more than three words on a car door or on a business card. In addition, working in a place where everyone didn't necessarily welcome my presence and with little support from my colleagues for what I was doing meant I had to really work on those relationships and build trust with those who lived there. I learned a lot during those years in which I split my time between the streets and back alleys of Minneapolis and attending classes at the university. So when I came to Madison as their new police chief, I had a lot of ideas about how policing ought to operate in a democracy. I knew things had to change in the department. That's what I heard from the Board of Police and Fire Commissioners who hired me. And that's why I was called to be there. I was expected to bring in reform and change, especially the way in which the department was handling protest. The old ways of handling conflict were simply no longer working. The basically all-white and all-male police department was fighting protesters downtown and charges of racial and gender insensitivity in other parts of the city. Nevertheless, I quickly came to see that my problem wasn't with the community, it was with the cops. Many of them were not buying into this progressive agenda of change and improvement. Most of them could not believe there could be any other way than handling protests than at the end of a stick. And therefore, it came to be that any change that I suggested was resisted. Now, before I came to Madison, I had really enjoyed the camaraderie of being a police officer. That blue culture is a very strong one. And I was very much a part of that culture. While my colleagues may not have always agreed with my views on policing, they seemed to tolerate me. They always felt, well, after all, I was still one of them, as crazy as I was. So when I came to Madison, all that changed. To many officers, I was not one of them. I was an outsider, and I felt the isolation. I had a choice. Was I going to back off or press on? Was it going to be the depression of loneliness and going along with the way things were, or if I didn't, would I find internal strength in the solitude that I was about to enter? So it took me 10 to 15 years of my life in a bureaucracy of less than 500 employees to finally build a new coalition of police officers who were educated, diverse, committed to the idea of a democratic police. And during that time, I learned about the solitude of leadership. After I retired, a team of independent researchers from Washington conducted a three-year study about changing police in Madison. They wrote this in their final report. They said it's possible to change a traditional, control-oriented police organization into one in which employees become members of work teams and participants in decision-making processes. The Madison Police Department has changed the inside with apparent benefits as reflected by improved attitudes for employees. This research suggests that associated with these internal changes are external benefits for citizens, including indications of reductions in crime and reduced levels of concern about crime. But doing that took a long time. It required not just one leader, but a number of leaders to emerge in the organization. People who knew who they were and where they were going. And they had to stand up to those both above them and below them in the organization who didn't want to change. They had to understand and accept the solitude of leadership. Now, a colleague of mine recently sent me a copy of a talk given by William Derezowitz of Yale University. He's a literary critic, quite outspoken, but he talks in this article about leadership in a democracy, and especially the bureaucracies in these great democracies. And it was a speech that he'd actually given to the October incoming class at West Point. Derezowitz talked about the danger of those who attempt to lead with their values, especially those who choose to lead in large bureaucracies like the US Army, corporations, churches, or large financial institutions. He was talking to young men and women who would soon be leading in one of the largest bureaucracies the world has ever seen, the US Army. Now, I have a personal interest in what he had to say. You might notice on my cap today, it's Veterans for Peace, an organization which I am also proud to become a member of. And let me just say as an aside here, if you're a veteran, you need to join Veterans for Peace. They've got a booth right inside here on the fairgrounds. But I too, as you know, have served in the military and studied and practiced leadership for probably most of my life. But even more importantly, my daughter now serves in that bureaucracy. She is an Army officer stationed today in Afghanistan. When I told her about the article I had just read by Derezowitz that I'm about to discuss today, she told me that she and other junior grade officers in Afghanistan had already read it. That, by the way, is a very hopeful sign. Here's part of what Derezowitz said, and he speaks boldly. He said, many people you will meet as you negotiate the bureaucracy of the Army, or for that matter, whatever institution you end up giving your talents to after the Army, whether it's Microsoft or the World Bank or whatever, the head of my department had no genius for organizing or initiating anything, no particular learning or intelligence, no distinguishing characteristics at all, just the ability to keep the routine going. And he went on. Why is it so often that the best people are stuck in the middle and the people who are running things, the leaders, are the mediocrities? Because excellent isn't usually what gets you up the greasy pole. What gets you up is talent for maneuvering, kissing up to the people above you, kicking down to the people below you, pleasing your teachers, pleasing your superiors, picking a powerful mentor and riding his coattails until it's time to stab him in the back. Jumping through hoops, getting along by going along, being whatever other people want you to be, so that it finally comes to seem that you have nothing inside you at all. Not taking stupid risks like trying to change how things are done or question why they are done. Just keeping the routine going. Now, I've spent my life in three large bureaucracies, the military, the police, and the church. And I have to tell you, I spent a lot of my time and a lot of my energy questioning, challenging, trying to improve how things are done, and taking some risks. What Derezowitz had to say is true in my experience. Bureaucracy is primarily about two things, about pleasing superiors and never taking a risk. In short, being mediocre, just keeping the routine going. Now, the danger of mediocrity becoming the norm in our nation's major institutions is very troubling. In fact, it's downright disturbing. But being forewarned is being forearmed. And while those entering into leadership may hold our nation's values, they will be confronted with things that are wrong in their organization. And the question will be, will they have the courage to do what is right? Will they have that kind of internal courage? Because believing and doing are not necessarily things that flow out from one another. But more important, will they or you even know what the right thing is? Because when you stand and say, no, I refuse. And when you say it to authority, when you challenge a wrong-headed policy or illegal or immoral organizational decision, when you say this is not right and I will not do it, you may lose, you will lose loyalty, you'll lose support, you'll lose the approval of those who both above you and below you in the organizations. Maybe you'll lose even all this from your friends. You may even lose your job or your best friend. And that's where solitude comes in. And that's why it's important for you, if you choose to lead, to know who you really are and what you truly stand for. And be able to do it. And be able to do it when almost everyone will think you are either wrong or a troublemaker. I was only following orders does not cut it anymore. Leaders must prepare themselves to act on the tough situations before they happen. It's not what the company or organization believes. It's not even what the church believes or what your friends or colleagues believe. It's what you believe. Now, you've heard me use the words, both the words loneliness and solitude. They are closely related, but they are different. If doing the right thing results in loneliness rather than spiritual strength that can be found in solitude, then making the right choice, the right decision, will be difficult, if not impossible. To Derezowitz, the very essence of leadership is solitude. He writes, the position of the leader is ultimately an intensely solitary, even intensely lonely one. However many people you consult, you are the one that has to make the hard decisions. And at such moments, all you really have is yourself. Now, I would add that you must be in the position of both preparing for and knowing that you are enough. You are enough to do the right thing in the face of all the pressure and sanctions your organization can throw in your face and your career. That means thinking about what you're doing before your values are challenged. So let's now look at the impact of leadership outside the bureaucracy. Can leadership outside the bureaucracy have an impact? Well, in 2006, Greg Mortensen, a former mountain climber turned humanitarian, wrote a great book. I'm glad to see some of you know what I'm talking about here. It was about his work in Pakistan called Three Cups of Tea, One Man's Mission to Promote Peace, One School at a Time. And if you haven't read the book, you should. It shows there's an alternate way. The original title really captures what this book is all about. It was originally titled Three Cups of Tea, One Man's Mission to Fight Terrorism and Build Nations. It's about fighting terrorism the best way and building nations. How extreme this thought is without killing people. For 9 years now, we have been retaliating for what happened on this day 9 years ago. We have killed and been killed. We have spent trillions of dollars. And how's it all working for us? Yes. But Mortensen had another idea, outside the bureaucracy, outside the corporations. Three Cups of Tea, as many of you who have read that book knows, it's come from a local saying in the Baltistan area of Pakistan. It says this: the first time you share tea with me, you are a stranger. The second time you take tea, you are an honored guest. The third time you share a cup of tea, you become family. Now, working outside of government agencies, outside of bureaucracy, Mortensen was able to become family, to build hundreds of schools which educated girls along with boys in the rural areas of Pakistan and Afghanistan. It's a great effort. Now, is this a lesson for America? Well, I hope so. Didn't we do this after World War II? I mean, I remember this. Didn't we have something like the Marshall Plan? Didn't we help those with whom we were at war to rebuild their nations? And aren't they partners today? USA Today recently reported that General Petraeus had read Mortensen's book, and he ordered his staff to do likewise. Now, this is very encouraging. Perhaps in this giant bureaucracy, someone will question, will try something new, will take a risk, will be a leader. The question before us, I think, as a nation, is whether or not there's a better way of helping people than by threatening them by force. Does killing people lead to their submission or their resistance? I think we all know the answer to that question. We don't have to look too far back in history to find it. Now, I am not an absolute pacifist. I believe physical force should always be the very last resort. I can support armed interventions when we follow the principles of what we Christians call a just war. However, when we use physical force in either situation, either individually as a nation or I would say even as a people, we must admit that it is a failure both to our leadership and to our diplomacy. Now, I might expect this on Sunday in my congregation to clap because I have never, this is kind of startling a little bit here, that we don't actually have that feedback. So after Petraeus had read this book, he actually sent an email to Mortensen. And he said that, he told him that he had received the book and that he had gleaned 3 points from this book. Petraeus said the 3 points are build relationships, listen more, and have more humility and respect. Well, that is another way. But will the largest bureaucracy in the world and the richest nation in the world be able to implement new ways of thinking and new approaches in order to keep America safe? Because being able to do this will not only save thousands of lives and billions of dollars, but could make the world a better place for every one of us. Just as an aside thought, just to put things into perspective, we can build 20 schools in Afghanistan for the price to keep one soldier there for a year. 20 schools, one soldier. Let's do it. Let's look at those 3 points again. I mean, they're familiar to me for a couple of reasons. They are eventually what I learned about policing a democracy. And they're very familiar to me because, like many of you, I voted for a man who seemed to practice these values. I saw him doing it in his campaign, and I've seen him do it since he was elected to the presidency of the United States. But the question is, and this is really the question, will this nation give President Obama time to demonstrate that these values work? Because they're certainly not going to work after 2 years, and they're probably not going to work after 4 years. They're probably going to work after 8 years, and the man who would succeed or woman who would succeed as the presidency of the United States. It has to be continuing. This has to be what our nation is all about. But I sense that Obama understands this, that he leads by strengthening our nation's relationships in the world. He listens to all points of view, and he appears to be humble and respectful to other people while he's doing that. So I see these values being practiced internationally, nationally, and even personally. And though it's just a small point, it still is leading and modeling this, that he would bring a college professor and a police sergeant together to talk about a grave misunderstanding. But the sooner the rest of our government and the military can begin to practice the leadership implied in these 3 points, which are building relationships, generously listening to other people, and being respectful and humble as we're doing it, the safer this nation will be now and in the future. And probably more importantly, we will be a better nation for having done it. So when we practice these 3 values, not only in our foreign policy, but in our personal relationships at home and at work and in our neighborhoods, we will see our lives become better. So let's try it now. I mean, seriously, let's turn to the person next to you that you don't know, and then ask the person, after you introduce them, and say, why are you here today? Generously listen to them, and then tell them who you are and why you're there too, okay? So let's just take a moment and do this. Well, Ed, hi. Okay, well, thank you. Well, great, great. Well, how was that? I mean, reach out to somebody you don't know, right, and talk to them. What was that like? You good? Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, see, you like it so much you don't want to stop. That's really good. Well, we do have a noon hour. We can continue. That's good. So I think it's time for us to now define ourselves as to who we are as a people. And I think we are not what others in the world imagine us to be. And as long as those misrepresentations occur in the rest of the world, we're all in grave danger. And that is why the last election was about hope, about participation, and most of all about peace. Now let's make sure that our values result in action through our nation. So when we require those who represent us from town boards to school boards, from city councils to Congress, to recognize and practice our values, like building relationships, generous listening, and being humble and respectful in the ways in which we operate in the world, we will be a country which truly promotes peace, one person, one relationship at a time. Thank you for listening to me this morning and for reaching out, and may God bless you and God bless America.